welcome to the third episode of Absolutely Intercultural, and thanks for tuning in. This week, the Chinese president traveled to the West, to the United States, to meet George Bush. Our virtual journey will take us in the opposite direction. We will take a closer look at one of the most fascinating and diverse countries, but also one of the most controversial ones in the world, China. In our column, Absolutely Educational, we have two guests today. I interviewed Professor Stefan Kammhuber, who has both a scientific interest in the country, but he also fell in love with its people and its beauty. And we'll hear why Xing Yi, a Chinese girl who studies in Europe, was very impressed by a little Belgian statue, the mannequin Piss. After that, we'll be absolutely indiscreet again. This time, we'll talk about the cultural implications of Google's new Chinese name and why what was called the Old Hound now likes to be addressed as the Harvest Song. And in the end, we have a little Chinese lesson for you. Jenny and Ken from the Chinese Pod podcast talk about politeness in China. So there are lots of interesting things to come. But before we kick the show off, we'll have a little round of feedback for you. B. King wrote,
"It is really a great idea to podcast in intercultural matters. I've been thinking of doing the same thing and glad you have got it started. I have linked your site with mine, which is also intercultural focused."
Well, that is a wonderful idea and exactly what we're looking for on this podcast. Please get in touch with us. Maybe you can even send us an audio file and we'll integrate your contribution in one of our next shows. We promise that. And Michael took the time to answer the question, "Can intercultural awareness be taught in the classroom?" He wrote,
"Great show. You folks have definitely gotten off on the right foot. I like the level of interaction you seem to be cultivating between you and your listeners." Well, Michael, thank you. I do believe intercultural awareness can be taught both in a traditional classroom and online. The trick, however, is in tapping into either the authentic diversity found within a class, or, better yet, in a community. Send learners out into the community on intercultural missions. This could work for an online class as well, but I think something authentic, project-based, and collaborative might be more productive.
Okay, so this is what Michael sent us, and he posted it on the blog. Please do the same. We'll come back to this point later, by the way, so please stay tuned. Thanks to everybody who has mentioned our podcast on their blogs, websites, and in their own podcasts. We really appreciate that, and we are amazed by the positive reactions we are getting. Please, please, please don't hesitate to get in touch with us. We are really open for new suggestions, interview partners, and everything that involves intercultural matters. For any kind of cooperation, please get in touch with us. You know, our email address is contact@absolutely-intercultural.com. So, let's get started with our first column, Absolutely Educational. I have Professor Stefan Kammhuber with me. He is an expert on intercultural communication and he teaches at Rhein A Campus in Remagen. Stefan, thank you for being here with us on the show today. I would like to ask you a couple of things about China because I know that you've been there several times, but maybe you can start by telling us why China? Why are you interested in China?
Oh, it was because of two reasons, I guess. The first was a scientific interest because I was involved in a huge research project about People's Republic of China, about designing intercultural training material and media, and therefore we traveled to China to evaluate the training sessions we did with the managers in Germany. And during this time, when I was the first time in China, I really fell in love with this country because it's so huge, first of all. It's so rich of cultural history. And I made a lot of friends there.
Okay. I sometimes find it difficult even to scratch beneath the surface when I go to European countries. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess this is much more difficult in China. How do you try to sink into this culture and get to know people how they really are?
Mm. First of all, people have a lot of stereotypes about Chinese people, about Chinese food, for instance, that Chinese eat everything but the table or so. And what they don't know that the Chinese kitchen is rich, is absolutely delicious and much more cultivated than the German kitchen, for instance. That's the first, the stereotyping about China. But indeed, there are a lot of differences between, for instance, German thinking and Chinese thinking regarding the way to handle conflicts, the way to talk to each other, to build up relationships, to build up trust in relationships with
each
other.
Can you give a concrete example of what you're thinking of? For example, in Germany, maybe you create trust by presenting yourself, telling people about your history, etc. Would that be the same in China?
First of all, Chinese people check if you're really a nice person. You're not there as a function, like that I go to China as a German professor. I'm going there as Stefan Kammhuber, and I'm professor, and people want to know me as a person. That's why they're asking a lot of very personal questions. So if I'm married, how many children do I have? And in former times, how much do I earn? And all that, it's a very personal talk. And I observed a lot of Germans have a lot very difficulties with these very, very long, small talks to getting to know each other, to build up a really personal relationship and to take care of this relationship.
I can imagine that. You said in former times they ask you that. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that now they know what Westerners like and what they don't like?
I meant in particular the question, how much do you earn? Because in former times there were not so many differences what the people earn, so you can ask for that, and it's more a question about do you feel good, how do you do? It's more meant as to know the person.
Okay, doesn't it take an awfully long time to feel comfortable in a culture which is so different? I mean, when do you start relaxing?
I mean, I was there as a person and as a researcher. And as a researcher, I'm really interested how the people are thinking, how they are feeling, and how they are behaving. And that's why I'm more curious how it is, and not so much horrified by some things. But indeed, there are things. For instance, Chinese people are thinking in networks. That means they have strong ties in the network of the family, of the extended family. And they're taking care of each other in a way we don't know in Europe. But on the other hand, beyond this network, they don't take care of anybody. And that leads to situations where people are hurt on the street and other people just passing them. So, and as a German, and because I know some of the Chinese thinking, at least a little bit, I can understand it, but I cannot accept it. So I see there's an inner logic in the behavior, and people behave because they cannot take care of everybody, because they put so much effort in taking care inside the network that they cannot do that outside the network. But it's from a background where I was socialized, it's difficult to accept emotionally.
And I bet there are many things like that where we sort of have to be tolerant to feel comfortable. But on the other side of the scale, are there any things where you say, gosh, I wish we were a little bit more like that in Europe?
Mm-hmm. What I learned from my Chinese friends and from my time in China is they are really very sensitive in talks and in meetings, in public situations, that they really do not embarrass anybody. They have a high sensibility when a situation is coming up where people's feelings could be hurt. And they have a lot of strategies to avoid these situations. That means they use a lot of indirect communication, which is for German really a difficult thing, because Germans are well known as the most direct people in the world, or as rude people in this way. But that I learned very much to really look carefully the nonverbal behavior of the others, and to see, oh, there's a situation where he or she feels uncomfortable with, so I have to take care of that.
Have you been to any other Asian countries or to other places in the region? I'm wondering, would it make sense to transfer something you've learned about China, for example, to another place like Singapore? Do you think that you would expect similar situations, or does one have to be as careful as going to Sicily and Stockholm, for example?
Of course, there are differences between the Asian countries or cultural regions. Even in China itself, it's such a huge country. But there are, on the other hand, a lot of commonalities. That means the way to handle conflict, to be very sensitive in public situation, not to embarrass anybody, not to criticize anybody in public, to take care of relationships. That's the same in Singapore as it is in Indonesia, for instance, the other country I'm pretty familiar with. Speaking softly with other persons, thinking in networks, in families, that's also the case in Singapore, as in Indonesia, as in Malaysia.
I know you also deal with students who are going abroad. Now, if you give or if you have to decide whether a student should get a scholarship or not, for example, what kinds of types of Europeans do you think would be better placed in Asia than in South America or in Australia, for example?
From my point of view, being a student means to make all the experiences you can get. As a student, I would recommend everybody to go to China or to United States or everywhere they want to go to. But I think people who are sensitive about personal situations, who are flexible in their communicative repertoire, and open, of course.
Okay, I know that you also teach this, so you give classes in intercultural communication. Now, how much of this, of what you've just described, is teachable?
I think there are three levels of learning. There are really nice books about intercultural interactions with German Chinese or European Chinese situations. And I'm always citing my favorite Richard Rorty. He said sometimes we became so open-minded that our brains have fallen out. And I think there's a lot of things to learn, to really knowledge to learn. Mm-hmm. So that you can learn from a book. And the other thing is to get the feeling for it. Mm-hmm. There are trainings, intercultural trainings for China, and there are some criteria of quality. The better ones are always taught by a Chinese and a German trainer. It's not automatically that a Chinese trainer is better than a German trainer, but the chance is to see Chinese behavior in role plays and whatever, and that's better than only to read a book. I think it's always a combination of different things, learning before with some knowledge, some intercultural training, and then to make the experience and to be a little bit accompanied or coached during this experience during his stay or her stay in China.
Okay, thank you very much, Stefan.
Thank you.
In this next piece, Hin Yi shares with us her surprise to find out that in Europe, a little boy can turn into a hero. She also tells us about the culture shock she had when she arrived in Europe.
Now, I have read something on the internet about you, actually, and this is that you knew something about Europe before you came here, and it was a funny story about a little man in Belgium. Can you please tell us something about this?
Right. My father has once been in Belgium. He took us a lot of things from this country, and what impressed me mostly is the copper sculpture of the naked little boy.
Okay, so that's mannequin piss, we call that.
and I heard that he's a great Belgian national hero. And in China, if we say somebody's a hero, then we make them bigger and great. And it deeply impressed me.
Okay, I can imagine that, because when we look at Chinese statues, for example, you cannot really imagine that a little boy pissing could be a statue in China. You're absolutely right. Now, so you knew a little bit about Europe because of your father, because he had spent some time here. Did you have any stereotypes about Europe? Do you get any stereotypes in China about what the Europeans are like?
Especially I think some of German, and the German are very serious, very straight, very exact. That's what I have heard.
Okay, so these are the things that Chinese know about the Germans. Now, when you arrived here, and I think this was 5 years ago, did you have the famous culture shock? Was there something that really threw you during the first couple of weeks? Is there something that you remember now?
For example, I still remember that at the first time I went to get a note from the other students. She just said to me no, and because I have to work tonight, I need it. And perhaps for me, I would say I can give you a little bit later, but I wouldn't say directly no. But she's very kind, and she gives me several days later. But at that moment, I was a little bit shocked.
Xinyi, thank you very much for looking at our European culture from a Chinese perspective. And now for something completely different. In our column, Absolutely Indiscreet, Carsten talks about the cultural implications of Google's new Chinese name and why what used to be called the Old Hound now likes to be known as the Harvest Song.
A few days ago, Google announced its new Chinese name, Guge, which literally and officially means Harvest Song. But if one does not know the official definition, the new name could also be interpreted as Song in the Valley. Now Google says it gives you the sense of a fruitful and productive search experience in a poetic Chinese way, while others might explain to you with a frown how old-fashioned it sounds, since it reminds one of a slow and remote agricultural scene. In the past, some Chinese media and internet users have used Google's English name, while others have nicknamed it as Gugu, meaning doggy or old hound. The new name Guge is certainly better than those unofficial alternatives in the past, but interestingly, this new name of the world's biggest internet search engine does not really lead you to think of an internet search. Names are not just codes in Chinese. Each character of the Chinese language has its own meaning, but when two characters come together to make a phrase, it very often becomes more meaningful. Well, I'm pretty sure I've mispronounced the names and apologize for that. If you'd like to know more about this, then please go to interculturallearning.net, where I found this little piece of intercultural news. As always, you'll find a link to that page in our show notes. Well, Laurent, back to you. Can you please tell us what is in our last column for today, Absolutely Addictive?
Okay, thank you, Carsten. Before we wrap up this show, we've got a little Chinese lesson for you. Jenny and Ken from the Chinese Pod podcast talk about politeness in China. So please listen closely.
Great teachers in your pocket, excellent resources on the website. Learn Mandarin with Chinese Pod. Hello, we're Chinese Pod. We're in Shanghai. We're bringing you lessons in spoken Chinese. Today's lesson is a newbie, a beginner's lesson. And my name is Ken.
Hey, I'm Jenny. Good. Great to be back.
It's great to be back.
Yeah, now, day after day.
Day after day. It's always great to be back here. Jenny, I notice you're being very, very polite.
Yes.
As ever. You are very polite. How do you say polite in Chinese, please?
礼貌.
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 Jenny, you are very 礼貌.
Thank you. Do you think it's a national trait?
Of the Chinese?
Mm.
Absolutely. First, perhaps we could listen to our dialogue.
太晚了, 我想走。
我送你回家。
不用了, 太麻烦你了。
一点也不麻烦, 我们走吧。
太麻烦你了。
一点也不麻烦。 我们走吧。
Well, if you'd like to know what that meant, then please go to ChinesePod.com and subscribe to their show. Okay, We're about to wrap up this show. Thank you very much for listening. If you're not fully subscribed yet, you can go to the website www.absolutely-intercultural.com, and you will find several ways of subscribing to the podcast so that you're sure not to miss our next show.
And please don't forget to put your pin on our Flapper map by clicking on Add Yourself, also on the website.
Thanks to Carsten, our chief editor.
And thanks to Laurent, who has hosted the show today.
The next show, by the way, will come to you from Denmark, and the host will be Anne Fox.
Stay tuned!